Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session of the City Council
on December 13th, 2017. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Udaly.
Here.
Fritz. Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Wheeler.
Here. And Commissioner Fritz indicated she will be here very shortly. Please call the first time certain item, item 1342.
Accept the City of Portland Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2017.
So Ken Rust and Michelle Kirby are here to talk about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which we all call the CAFR for short. Good morning, Ken. Good afternoon. What day is it? I'm totally confused already. Good afternoon, Ken.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. For the record, my name is Ken Rust, and I'm the City's Chief Financial Officer and Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. Joining me this afternoon is City Controller Michelle Kirby, and we will be presenting to you today the City's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2017. And I know you're going to be asking yourself, didn't we have one of these presented to us already this year? And the answer is, yes, you did. But that was for the prior year. And we've been engaged in an initiative to produce the CAFR more timely. And the result of that is we actually get to present to you that CAFR in the calendar year in which we complete it. So therefore, a unique event today. We're going to celebrate the fact that you get to hear two CAFR presentations in one calendar year. At this point, I'd like to have Michelle walk you through the findings of the CAFR and the process that we use to complete it.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. The preparation of the annual CAFR is quite an extensive process, which, as you can see by the photo here, takes many hands to make it a success. The accounting division of BRFS has the responsibility.
BRFS?
Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services.
Thank you.
Has the responsibility of preparing the CAFR, ensuring its accuracy, and working with the auditors throughout the process. However, involvement is also needed from all the city bureaus, the city auditor's office, as well as our external auditors, Moss Adams, to ensure the timely, successful completion of this report. Several members of the accounting division team are here today, and if you would allow us, I'd like to recognize them for their hard work on this project.
Please note it took five people to hold this report up.
Yes, they will now stand so they can be identified.
Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work.
You.
Excellent job.
I'll offer my colleagues $1 if they can tell me where this photograph is taken.
It's taken from the it's in the South Waterfront, and it is taken from
the tram?
No, it's not. It's the
I'm not throwing you a lifeline.
You want a shout out, call a friend?
No, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. We're gonna see her all day until it comes to me.
It's our new home, the 22nd floor of the Congress building, which has beautiful views.
I lost.
Okay, well, I'm very pleased to be able to report to you that the June 30, 2017 CAFR was published on November 1st, or 120 days after fiscal year end. This marks the earliest CAFR completion date in recent city history. In fact, by working more efficiently, we've been able to reduce the time it takes to prepare the CAFR by 49 days over the last 3 years. The initiative to produce the CAFR within 120 days was a goal set by our CFO in the spring of 2015 to establish the city as leaders in financial reporting. And now we are within the top 10% of all local governments in terms of financial reporting excellence. So why is this important? Well, timeliness is a major objective of financial reporting in that it ensures the information is relevant and useful for decision making. Preparing the CAFR in less time also allows the accounting division to work on other important reporting initiatives, such as the popular annual financial report, or PAFR, which was produced for the first time last year. Now I'd like to discuss the highlights of the fiscal year 2016-17 CAFR. The good news is that our external auditors gave the city an unmodified or clean opinion and found no weaknesses or deficiencies in the city's accounting processes. In addition, the CAFR complies with state law, generally accepted accounting principles, fund balances continue to grow, and we received the Government Finance Officers Association Award for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the 36th consecutive year. Now, the not-so-good news is that our declining net position in governmental activities. During fiscal year 2016-17, the city's net position in the governmental activities area declined approximately $150 million, which brings it to a negative $1.6 billion. This negative trend is primarily the result of GASB accounting rules for pensions, but there are also other factors. And I'm now going to turn it back over to Ken, who will provide you with a more detailed assessment of the fund balance decline, the net position decline, excuse me, and the city's long-term financial health.
Could you give me a couple of sentences, not the long version, but the short version, in terms of the treatment of the pension liability? I assume you're referring to our unique pay-as-you-go system for police and fire pension and disability funding?
Well, the city has two pensions that it has to record in the financial statements. The Oregon PERS is one, and the FPDNR, or fire and police that you mentioned, is the other one. And it is the larger factor. It's the largest factor of our liabilities because, like you said, of the unique funding.
So, could you again, and just put this in sort of an abridged version, with regard to the non-PERS pension liability, which is pay-as-you-go. So there's really no risk of us not meeting that pension liability. And in my opinion, and I'm just one opinion, it does not jeopardize the overall financial standing of the, quote, corporation, unquote. How do they treat that liability?
Maybe if you would indulge us, I'm going to walk us through that, and I think I will address all of that question.
Perfect.
And the various elements to that.
I'll
and if I don't,
question,
certainly come
Ken.
Back and ask me.
Excellent.
And this is actually a good segue because, as Michelle indicated, we have this interesting anomaly on our financial statements, this real large negative net position. And I've presented this chart to you in past sessions when we presented the CAFR, and you can see this 10-year trend. We have two major areas in which we're measuring net position. Governmental activities, which is shown as the blue line on this chart, which is basically our general fund and transportation program. They're kind of governmental activities under our accounting rules. And then under our business activities, or the orange line, if you think of the water utility and the wastewater utility, BES, those are our major enterprise business activities. Their net position is increasing over time, really reflecting the fact that they're spending a lot of money on capital, and it's not just all borrowed money, but they're actually adding ratepayer cash and equity into that capital investment. What you see with governmental activities is, in particular, the sharp drop in 2015 was we were required to put onto our balance sheet the full unfunded liability for all of our pensions, both PERS and FPDNR. And as I've discussed with you over the years, FPDNR is this interesting legacy pension system that probably no other government has quite like ours. We have a pension system for old plan members closed in 2006 when we reformed FPDNR that requires us to pay pensions when they are due, not when those benefits are earned, like our rest of our system. So we don't put money away. The charter prohibits us specifically from putting money away. In fact, we can only maintain a reserve of $750,000. So we don't have assets that back the pension liability. What we do have is a dedicated property tax levy that can be levied by the City Council up to a maximum of $2.80 per $1,000 of real market value in the City of Portland. And what we have learned over time is that that tax levy has always been sufficient and generally much more sufficient than necessary to pay all the liabilities we do. And in fact, the actuaries for the FDNR fund routinely analyze that levy and the capacity of that levy to fund all obligations when due. And what they have found through their extensive simulation processes is that it's a very, very small probability that the levy would ever be insufficient. And in fact, we know from our reform of FPDNR in 2006 that for a while we would be carrying basically the funding of two pension programs, the old pension program and all the new hires going into OPSERP or OPERS, the PERS system that a lot of our other employees are covered by. We knew we would be adding a little bit of cost to that levy, and it was a modest way to unwind that old plan. In about 2033, we have hit a crossover point, and the levy requirements then decline and decline really for the rest of the forecast period. What that means is our period of risk is greatest between now and about 2033. And right now, we have way more capacity than needed to make good on those obligations. And as long as real market value continues to grow, as it has been, that capacity actually increases over time. So the question you asked, Mayor, about our unique pension system and should we be worried about it, the answer is yes, we should be worried about it, but we've taken the steps necessary to reform that plan. And that's one of the interesting things about the view of net position is if you look at this, you have $1.6 billion negative. The city's a AAA bond-rated credit. How does that work? And it works because the rating agencies and others look beyond just the presentation of net position in the CAFR to the kinds of things that we have that aren't captured by standard GASB and GAAP accounting to understand whether we have a problem in our ability to pay all of our costs and liabilities when due. So those are some of the interactions that's going on. So this chart is something that we've been showing you and presenting, I think, for the last 3 or 4 years.
So Ken, again, just because we have a new council and we've had this conversation in past years, so we have a unique pay-as-you-go system, which when these new rules kicked in, required us to show it as unfunded, which was a drag on our net position. But it may be unfunded, but it's not unsecured.
That's correct. And
it's secured against the assets of the city. So why isn't there a compensatory asset or security position shown to net that out?
That's a very good question. Under GASB accounting rules, Governmental Accounting Standard Board accounting rules that we're required to follow, they don't allow the recognition of that tax levy and the future value of that tax levy to be placed as an asset, if you will, on our balance sheet. And so I'm going to walk you through a couple things that I think are really important to kind of get to your question, is because that's at the crux of it, I think what's really important for us to understand is this is a very big negative number, but at the end of the day, is it impairing our ability to deliver, not just meet that obligation, but to deliver other services as well? So I want to provide a little bit of a framework, how I've thought about it, and how we get to the point of what we really should be focused on and worrying about. And the next chart really talks about what affects net position. And again, net position is basically assets minus liabilities. And there's a couple other adjustments too, but that's basically what it is. So what are the factors that decrease our net position? And by that, revenues or lessen expenses on a generally accepted accounting principles basis. So the things that can result in our net position declining is we have increases in pensions and other similar liabilities. That increases or decreases net position. We increase bonds payable without an offsetting asset, and we've done some of those transactions. I'm going to talk with you a little bit about that. Or we have non-cash expenses like depreciation that affect our income statement, if you will, but they contribute to expenses exceeding revenue. So these are the kinds of things that can result in us on a GASB GAAP measurement basis having expenses exceed revenues. On the other side of the equation is what can actually increase our net position. So the things that can increase our net position, you know, are things like external grants. If we got a grant to build a capital asset, the asset's on our balance sheet, but we don't have a liability, that increases our net position. If we fund capital improvements from current revenues, that helps to increase our net position. We have an asset, no liability. Or if surplus revenues are simply held, we maintain them in a fund balance, that increases our net position. So that's some of the dynamics that are going on here. And so what we've seen over time is that the things that have really driven up the increase in the decline in net position has been our pension liabilities and basically our underinvestment in things like transportation assets. Last year, for the fiscal year, we actually ended up on a governmental activity basis with investments in capital assets exceeding depreciation. That's the first time that's happened in a while. But we still had more depreciation of PBOT assets than we put in the ground by about $119-20 million. So we're still underinvesting, even though we were net positive on our capital investment side. So these are some of the dynamics that are going on. And what I've shared with you in the past is that trying to figure out what we should worry about, I think, requires us to restate the net position calculation to take into account some of these unique positives that the city enjoys. So, for example, I've taken those same net position figures, and for governmental activities, I've added back the value of the net pension liability for FPD&R. Why? We have a dedicated property tax levy that is available to pay that. It's always been sufficient. Our actuaries tell us that it has a very, very high degree of probability of always being sufficient. I deem that as something that should be treated as an asset, and so I've adjusted net position accordingly. I've added back the value of tax increment debt incurred in our urban renewal districts that does not result in us getting an asset back. So what happens in urban renewal, the city is the bond issuer, and those bond liabilities sit on the city's balance sheet. But what do we do with that money? We give the money to Prosper Portland, and they execute the urban renewal plans. We estimate that 75% of that liability we get about 25% back as a city asset, but 75% is on their books or elsewhere. But the creation of the urban renewal district means we get a stream of revenue to pay those bonds, and so therefore, and it can only be used for those bonds, so therefore there really isn't any impairment or inability to service that debt. I think it's a reasonable thing to adjust net position accordingly. And then finally, we've done transactions where we enter into agreements with other governments, and we have given, for example, Metro, we gave them $100 million to expand the convention center. In exchange, we were made part of an agreement where we get tax revenues from the county to pay debt service on those bonds. Those intergovernmental revenues aren't treated as an asset, but the assets allow us to service the liability, and I think it's fair to take that one off. So when you do this adjustment, what you find is that our net position in governmental activities has been relatively stable. And overall, when you combine that with the business activity growth, you see a slight increase in net position over time. And I think that that's a more fair reflection of our financial condition and strength, and it also squares up better with the way outsiders view us when they take into account these kinds of factors, people like rating agencies and investors, et cetera.
Ken, how many other cities have a pension system like ours, which creates such an anomaly?
I don't know that there is one. If there is, it's nothing of the magnitude of Portland. I've talked with the rating analysts from the rating agencies and asked that question. They can never give me an example.
And then the second question is, if we're already qualifying for AAA credit or close to AAA credit in key categories, isn't that in some ways the best indicator of how third-party evaluators view our balance sheet?
I think it's a very important indicator. Now, clearly, you know, people have raised issues about the accuracy of those ratings. It wasn't that long ago in 2008 where there was a lot of things that were rated AAA that ended up not performing very well. But I think on the municipal side, there's a general understanding and agreement that those ratings are valuable, and they are a pretty good assessment of the creditworthiness and ability to pay obligations when due. And I think that what they do, and I know I've talked with them, is that they make these kinds of adjustments and calculations. They well understand the FPD&R liability, and they're not worried about it. And the reason why they're not worried about it is because of the tax levy that backs it and the capacity of that tax levy to be sufficient over time. So I think that the credit rating is a good assessment. And I think when you adjust our net position to take into account things that we aren't allowed to capture under GASB accounting, it starts to give you a better idea of our credit strength and our financial condition at the moment. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have some issues, and I think we need to be aware of that. And that's always where I get this, well, what does all this mean and what should we do? What we want to make sure is that we focus on the right things. And I think if you just looked at net position without any adjustment, you think we should be dealing with FPDNR because clearly that's the thing that's driving this so far negative. And the answer is there's nothing to do with FPDNR. We've done that. We're monitoring it. And that's not the worry area. The worry area for us really is our underinvestment in capital assets. And when we start tearing apart and teasing out some of this information, we start to see that that's the one area that systemically is creating a negative and a draw on our net position. And that's something that we need to focus on. And frankly, that's something the council has been focusing on quite a bit over the last couple of years. What I've been trying to do, and we've had a really good conversation and kind of a segue of, well, what does all this mean and what should we do and how are we doing long term? Is I prepared this fiscal health snapshot a couple presentations ago, a way to think about some of the big, you know, financial issue areas that we're dealing with and how well we're dealing with them now and what that future looks like. And I broke it down into three categories: long-term liabilities in the form of PERS, FPDNR, and other post-employment benefits that we're obligated to pay. Our infrastructure liabilities in the utility area, in parks, and in civic and public safety and housing, and then our legacy liabilities like Portland Harbor and the levee system, and then employee costs. And you can see my assessment of them currently and into the future. And frankly, this is the same picture that I shared with you on February 1st of this year. I don't really see much change. You'll note that I have PERS as a red indicator, and frankly, I was concerned about that. I'm even more worried about it now. PERS, year over year on our financials, the net pension liability is up $340 million, and it's going to go higher. And just, you know, as a general rule of thumb, for every $100 million increase in that unfunded liability, that's about a $10 million increase in payroll cost. 40% comes to the general fund. That's $4 million. So 3.4 times that, you can see maybe $12 million or more cost coming our way. With PERS. And the thing about PERS, it's dependent on investment earnings. We had a change in the assumed earnings rate that increased the liability to us because it was actually recognizing that long-term they might not earn as much money. But those are the things that we have to pay attention to, and there's not much we can do about it. FPDR, on the other hand, you know, we understand very well, and we know that we have enough capacity to pay for it. I have that in green status, and as long as our tax system stays stable, I'm not too worried about that. We've talked about infrastructure financing. Utilities are doing well. They have big obligations. We have regulatory requirements to meet. But I'm pretty comfortable that those kinds of obligations will be met, and we've got a plan for it.
Can I just ask you about that?
Yes.
We've had this conversation every year about whether we need a fourth color. And the point that I would make is that according to the auditor's annual survey, just if you look at BES, something like 60 to 70% of the assets are in good or better condition. So that's a good trend line. They've got dedicated revenue from in terms of their financing model. And the council has agreed to a strategic plan for BES in particular, which promises over 10 years to maybe get to fully sustainable infrastructure. Is it still yellow on the future outlook because you're discounting the possibility that we get stuck with another LT2 or some unanticipated cost?
I think in where I'm at, why it's still yellow, I think for BES, the shade is closer to green. Although the rates and charges, I'd like to see them at trending down and close to inflation levels, and we're getting there, but we're not there yet. On the water side, we're now starting the ramp up with compliance for with the treatment facility. So I think that they, over the last year, might have got a little further away from green, and they're still in yellow status. So if I was going to add another color, I'd probably add purple, and because of the concern I have about PERS, I'd make it even as deep a color as I could.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of payroll is PERS? And I understand FPDNR is the lion's share of pension, but what percentage of payroll is PERS right now?
As you're asking, I'm trying to do the mental calculation. It gets a little more complicated because we have debt service on pension obligation bonds that fold into that. And
I
can get the number for
you.
I would expect it's in the 20% range plus.
Okay, and if you could get me the current and the projected, given
yes,
the current return assumptions.
So bottom line is that we, as good as we're doing at the moment, we have many challenges in front of us, and we shouldn't forget about that. And, you know, we got them in the area of long-term liabilities, infrastructure, and we're making a lot of improvement there. And, for example, things like Build Portland are helpful. They will improve the investment in infrastructure, but they're not going to help our net position, because if we borrow for those improvements, we're going to have an asset offset by a liability. Net position won't get better, but our assets will certainly be better. So, you know, what I've talked with you about in the past is that we basically have a math problem. Our expenses, operating, and capital are growing faster than revenues, and that's been the case for a while. So we know that that's kind of a systemic issue that we're facing, and we're looking at it right now. Here we are, the best revenue picture in the city's history, and we're in a position where we're looking for reductions from bureaus in order to balance all the needs that we have, operating costs, capital costs, and new programs. So, you know, you are wrestling with that, we're wrestling with that, but we're going to have to be mindful of that, because if we don't and try to bring that into a better balance through a combination of more revenue, less cost, those kinds of things, we do risk running into a position where we could be impairing not just our current financial well-being, but the financial well-being of the future of the city. And I think that's the important takeaway, is that we need to be constantly mindful of some of the systemic issues that we're wrestling with. You know, in summary, Michelle talked a little bit about what the CAFR, you know, presented to you. We're in full compliance with all of required accounting and standards. We have an unqualified or unmodified opinion. You know, our financial position is strong. Fund balances are growing. But we do have issues that affect our long-term health that we have to pay attention to. We have a track record of doing that, and I know that that's what's going to provide us the capacity to deal with that going forward. That really is the story. It's the same story we've been telling you, and it's a continuation of that story. But if you would indulge me for a few minutes, you know, this is the last time I'm going to get the chance to talk to you in my capacity as the city's chief financial officer. And I'd like to conclude the presentation with some thoughts about, you know, the financial operations of the city and what I've been able to help contribute to over my career. You know, over the past, you know, few months, I've had a chance to reflect on the more than 35 years that I've been working for the city in a variety of capacities on a broad range of projects and programs. You know, one area that I'm really the most proud of is the contribution that I have made to growing and improving the city's financial management capacity, particularly in three foundational areas that I'd like to discuss with you today. First, I'm really proud of the city's financial and policy framework that I inherited, an edifice that was built by my predecessors and mentors, people like Mark Gardner, Steve Bauer, David Smith, Tim Grew, and others. They laid down its initial underpinnings and structure and taught me what it takes to maintain, improve, and protect it. While the names of these individuals, soon to be joined by myself, will fade and be forgotten, I'm confident that the financial foundation and legacy of excellence that has been created will endure and continue to guide the city's decision-making. I want to acknowledge the vital role that you, the City Council, and the council members that preceded you have played in the city's financial success. Without your willingness to support the development, adoption, and implementation of sound financial policies and practices, the city would be facing a far different financial future. You know, balancing the wants and needs of our community within the fiscal boundaries that we operate within, it's never easy. However, when faced with the truly tough financial decisions, you have always erred on the side of financial prudence. And for that, I'm deeply appreciative. I also want to recognize the important role that our internal and external auditors play in reviewing our financial practices and performance, identifying issues and weaknesses when they occur, and recommending ways in which we can improve. While we may not always agree on every issue or finding or how best to proceed, I do know that our auditors are motivated to help the city continue improving its financial performance. Second, I'm proud to have helped maintain and improve the city's credit ratings, which are critically important to the city's financial operations and are integral to almost everything we do. Credit ratings are a shorthand way for finance professionals like myself to measure how well we're doing, as it provides an independent assessment or grading of our work. Early in my career, when visiting Moody's Investor Services offices in New York on credit rating visits, I was struck by the artwork that adorned their entryway to their building at 99 Church Street in Lower Manhattan. An imposing metal frieze depicting two allegorical figures standing atop the inscription, "Credit, Man's Confidence in Man." The city's credit ratings reflect the confidence that external parties place in the city's financial integrity and its capacity to honor and fulfill its financial obligations in good times and bad. When I started working for the city, it had already earned its AAA bond rating, and we have never lost that rating while I've been charged with this management. In fact, during my watch, the city has never had a downgrade of any of its direct credit ratings. We've achieved numerous credit ratings upgrades, but never a downgrade, even during times of tax law and legislative changes, recessions, great recessions, and citizen initiatives that threatened our fiscal health and stability. The city has fulfilled and continues to fill that underlying credit premise, man's confidence in man, and has earned the financial integrity that comes with it. Lastly, I am proud to have worked with so many dedicated and talented finance managers, bureau directors, city attorneys, and staff over the course of my career, and for the opportunity to help grow, develop, and lead the city's financial services. Since returning to the city in 2014, I have been committed to creating a high-performing financial services organization and establishing the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services as the trusted advisor and voice on city financial matters. With the support of my bureau colleagues, each of whom has my deepest respect and appreciation, I believe I've achieved that goal. With a solid foundation in place, I am confident that the city will continue the strong financial management that supports all that we do to serve the citizens of Portland. You know, looking back on my career at the city, it surprises and humbles me to see all the things that I've been part of, made more special by the fact that I was born and grew up in Portland. I am proud to have been part of making Portland a better place for Portlanders, and I'm proud to be a public servant. Thank you for your support and for the opportunity to serve the city of Portland.
Ken, thank you. And I know everybody up here wants to say something as well. Why don't we accept the report and dispense with the business?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Any further discussion on the report? Please call the roll.
You Daly.
Well, thank you for the report, and I'm sad that I haven't gotten to pick your brain more this year, but maybe I'll be able to do that even after you're gone, depending on where you're headed.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for the report, and it is sobering news in some ways that we do need to continue figuring out how we're going to pay for the obligations in the years to come. Thank you for your work making that more likely and more possible. Thank you for all you've taught me over the last 9 years. I half expected you to end your speech with, and for this reason I am filing for Commissioner Saltzman's seat, because it would be a solid resume for any ongoing service to know what you've done for the city of Portland, and you actually can have the dollars and cents to prove it. So I'm very glad that I've had the opportunity to work with you, and I wish you all the best. Aye.
Fish.
Well, Ken, I want to join my colleagues in thanking you for your public service. We live in a time when public service has been degraded and attacked, the very idea of public service. And yet, when you think about it, if it were not for people like you and for governmental institutions, people would not get the services that they've come to expect. And the confidence that people have in their government is in large part a reflection of the confidence they have in the systems that are set in place. I think Commissioner Fritz would join me in the following sentiment, that during our service together, I've served a little over 9 years, she served almost 9 years, there have been a number of reforms that have been adopted during our tenure, which I think we would both agree have had a significant impact on improving the quality of the work that we do and the improved public attitudes towards our city and other things. And for me, three of the top reforms are creating an independent budget office, supporting the independence of the elected auditor, and reestablishing the chief financial officer position, and making sure that that office was independent and reported both to the CAO and to the city. to the council. And I think those three reforms have had and will continue to have a significant impact on the very issues you've addressed in your farewell address. I will say on a personal note that I can think of only a couple times in my service where I was undecided on an issue, and the last person I spoke to was the person that convinced me that I should go back to my basic instinct on something. And on a very high-profile issue that we will not belabor publicly, you were the last person I spoke to. You gave me very candid, direct advice about the financial implications of a big issue before the council. And because of my great respect for you, it was the tipping point in causing me to get to a point where I could not support the then proposal. We owe you a great debt of gratitude. I wanted to ask you before you lost the mic, outside of PERS, what's going to keep you up at night? But I think from the chart and all those red lines, I think I know what's going to keep you up at night. But we owe you an enormous debt of gratitude for your work. And just speaking as one commissioner that's had a chance to work with you on some very challenging issues, it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you very much. Aye.
Wheeler?
Long before I had the privilege of working directly with you, Ken, I heard about you from a number of people. And as people may remember, maybe they don't, I actually used to have another job with the state for 6 years as the state's treasurer. And during that time, PERS was very much front and center. My piece of that puzzle was really the investment side of the equation and making sure that our pension system continued to get the top returns amongst our peers in the United States, which we did then and which we continue to do to this day. But the reality is the structure of the pension system is very problematic when we look at long-term liabilities and we look at what it does to school district and county and municipal government budgets. It is a problem that has not been fully addressed and which must be fully addressed for the sake of all of the services that we provide that the community expects and wants us to provide, not just here in Portland, but all around the state. And on a whole host of issues, your name would always come up as somebody who I should speak to, who I should consult with, as somebody who is trusted both amongst professionals in the finance community as well as people who were maybe laymen. And your job is a unique one and has been a unique one in that you walk in both worlds. You don't get to just go and talk to the people at Moody's and have very cerebral technical conversations around bond ratings or unfunded liability or whatever. You also then have to come into this chamber and work with all of us. And we have varying degrees of technical expertise on the matters which you have outlined today. And you have to explain it to the public. And explaining some of this complex financial machinations to the public, it's time-consuming and it can be frustrating, but you've done it with aplomb and directness. You've worked for the city for 20 years. You've provided sterling public service. And I will tell you, I understand people retire or people move on to other parts of their lives, and they should, and you should, and you have lots of potential in really any direction you want to go. I will miss you, and this institution will miss you, and the shoes that are left to be filled in your absence are substantial. And I'm just going to put out your summary as where you think we should be going and what you think we should be putting front and center. And I want to assure you I will continue to fight hard on all of those issues to make sure that we address these issues. One final thought. The finance shop, and I guess I'm speaking broadly to your colleagues as well, is largely invisible to the rest of the world. I felt that way when I was the state treasurer. You know, I'd sit there in my office and I'd wait for people to come and visit, and nobody ever would.
So he ran for mayor. He wanted a little more attention.
I wanted a little more action. But the truth is, it's one of those roles. You know, it's like the backbone to a body. It's critical, but you don't know it's there until you've cracked it. And the same is true with financial services and the financial operations of the city government. What you do is critically important. It's the backbone. It's the revenues. It's the support for our bonding mechanism. It's our ability to pay for capital construction projects and other improvements. And nobody notices it until it's on the front page of the paper. And believe you me, there is never any article going, oh my God, can you believe it? For the 17th year in a row, the city of Portland has a AAA bond rating. Read below. Nobody cares. But the minute that bond rating is squandered and the cost to taxpayers for every capital construction project goes up substantially, then people are going to notice and they're going to care. And you always operated as though you clearly understood that it's not just about the ledgers and the spreadsheets and the pro formas. You understood that what's represented in those numbers and those columns and those complex calculations is our ability to serve the most vulnerable people in this community. That's what was at stake, and you got it. And boy, will I miss you. Great job. I vote aye. The report's accepted. Thanks for your service.
Thank you.
And to all of you in the finance arena, thank you for your service as well.